And in the last part of our show today, we're going to rebroadcast an interview with Esteban Arellano, who passed away recently. We honor his life and we send condolences to his family and many friends. I'm very happy now to welcome to the Radio Cafe Esteban Arellano. He is a poet, artist, writer, and farmer in Embudo, New Mexico, and his new book is called Enduring Acequias, Wisdom of the Land, Knowledge of the Water. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you.
So let's talk for a moment about acequias. Many of us who've lived here for a while know what they are, have experience with them, but some people, maybe it's a new word for them. What are acequias?
Well, acequias are canals that bring the water directly from the river to the farming communities. Acequias is a word that, from the research I've done, it seems it might have originated in Ethiopia, then from there went to Yemen, and then through North Africa, eventually to the Iberian Peninsula, and he eventually got to New Mexico in 1598. So they have a very long history.
Now, what is the connection among all these different places? I mean, is there a common thread in the land or climate of all the different places that have acequias?
I think it's that all the acequias are usually in arid lands, like in New Mexico here. You know, it's a very dry state, so the only way that people can get water to eat it, to grow food, is by diverting the water directly from the river and bringing it on these open canals directly to their fields. And they're all gravity flow, so that means that acequias don't use any other form of energy, which I think makes them very sustainable. Acequias are also probably the oldest form of democracy in this country. Because every community, like where I live in Embudo, we have 10 acequias, and each acequia has their own commission and their own mayordomo. So that makes them very site-specific as to the type of control people have over the water.
How does that actually work? I mean, when you talk about it being a democratic system, you've got an acequia community, traditionally a village, and the water is distributed, it's turned on in one field and off in another, and then goes on. How does that democratic process work?
Well, the way it works is that there's a commission, like I mentioned, for every acequia. We have a president of the acequia, then we have the treasurer and the secretary, and then we have the mayordomo, who is the one that's in charge of the water on a daily basis. If you want to irrigate and you have a water rights that's called a parciante, then what you have to do is that you contact the mayordomo and ask him if nobody else has the water. If no one has the water at that time, then you can go ahead and use it. And if you steal the water, let's say, from your neighbor, well, the mayordomo can come and fine you, give you a fine for violating the bylaws or the regulations that the acequias have.
Right, right. Does that happen sometimes?
Yeah, once in a while it happens, because people, you know, especially when it's very dry, like it's happened now several years now in the past 15 years, you know, we've had about 4 or 5 years that have been very dry, and people sometimes they don't want to lose their garden, so they might try to steal the water from their neighbor. And when that happens, then the mayordomo will have to go in and check with that particular parciante and tell him, you know, well, you're in violation of the law. And if the first time, he might just give them a warning and tell them, okay, if it happens again, we're going to fine you. So it does happen.
There's also a kind of community coming together in cleaning the acequias.
Right. That happens in the spring. Usually around March or April, the community comes together to clean the acequia. It's the annual cleanup. And every parciante has to either go himself to clean the acequia, or else what he can do also is he can hire somebody to work for him. In the past, it was usually done by people in the community, but now we usually have to pay people from the outside to come and help us.
What changed?
Well, I think that families in the past were a lot bigger families. Now there's smaller families, and also before, people were all dependent on the land to serve for their survival. Now, a lot of people work out of the community. They work in Los Alamos, they work in Santa Fe, Taos, or some have even left the village and they still retain the land and their water rights. So let's say that they're working in Albuquerque, they can't come just to clean the acequias, so they have to hire somebody to do it for them.
You write in your book, Enduring Acequias, that the Camino Real is really the Camino de Agua.
Right.
What does that mean?
Well, it means that when people were first coming up the Camino Real from Mexico City all the way to northern New Mexico, they had to be very aware of the water sources. So they were always following the water sources. They knew where the springs were. They knew where water would accumulate. And when they had about maybe 500 families coming up north, plus several thousand livestock, they had to make sure that they were close to a water source so that they could feed their livestock and that people could drink water also. So it makes a Camino Real like Dr. Tomás Martínez Saldaño says, like a ladder, you know. So people knew exactly where all the water was all the time, and that's what they were following. If not, they never would have been able to make it up north.
Right. Now, did Native American people use acequias?
Yes, the Native Americans were also irrigating, but they weren't irrigating at the level that when the acequias were established. They were just diverting the water usually from intermittent streams or from the Rio Grande, but they didn't have the network of acequias that were later established.
Once they were established and Spanish people and Native American people were living in the same area in various levels of harmony or disharmony, did they start using acequias?
Yeah, because if you don't have water, you can't do anything in terms of a community, you know. You can't build a community, you can't build churches. You need water. People needed water to make their adobes so that they could build their churches. You know, a lot of people have said that the churches were here first than the acequias, but that's not possible. Right. They had to have been the acequias first so that people could bring water to where they lived, not only for building, but also for growing food. So the acequias were the most important element. The acequias have been called also the first public works projects in this country.
Now, you write about watersheds and food sheds, and let's talk about food for a moment. The foods that are native to this area, the foods that were brought in from the old world. Let's say a couple of hundred years ago in the Embudo Valley, where you have spent your life, what foods were people growing? I mean, it was pretty much subsistence. They were growing what they ate.
Yeah, that's right. You know, I think the native crops were corn, chili, squash, and then of course once the Spanish settlers came in, they also brought seeds that some of these settlers were familiar with. You know, they introduced the watermelon, the cantaloupe. Those are from India or Southeast Asia. They also introduced different fruit trees like apricots, peaches, apples. Those are not native to the Americas. So what we have here in northern New Mexico is kind of a hybrid system of the different type of foods that came from different parts of the globe.
The subtitle of your book is Wisdom of the Land, Knowledge of the Water.
Right.
And I think we tend to take sometimes a very, what would you call it, kind of scientific or engineering perspective toward water in New Mexico. Talk about the wisdom piece of it. What kind of wisdom, what kind of knowledge do you gather when you've lived on the land your whole life, specifically where water is concerned?
Well, I think that one of the people that have lived here forever know that wherever you have cottonwoods, water is close by, because cottonwoods don't have a very deep root system. So in the fall, like at this time of the year, you can figure out where there's water just by seeing where the cottonwoods are. Also, the people here were very aware as to where there were tinajas de agua, you know, rocks usually that had a big indentation in them where water gathered, and people could survive if they were there because they knew where the water was. they knew where there were all these ojitos. So people, when they were building the acequias, they had to really find out where the different springs were, and they usually built the acequias where the springs were located. So that in like this summer, it's been very, very dry, or last year more than this summer. If your acequia is built where there are ojitos, where there are springs, then that means that those springs feed the acequia and you will still be able to get some water. So that's some of the knowledge that the people gathered just from observing the land. And nowadays, I think everything is done so scientifically that sometimes, even when they're building big projects along the river, you know, if they put cement and they happen to cover the springs with cement, well, then they're covering up one of the sources of water that people used before. And that's happened here. We've seen it here in Budo Valley in some of the big diversion dams that have been constructed.
Tell us a little bit about how you grew up and what was it like for you in Embudo as a farmer when you were young and as an adult.
Well, I think growing up here, my parents were always they always lived off the land, so that was just part of growing up. I really never thought I would be staying here in Embudo and working the land, you know. But then it so happened that my father was involved in a very bad automobile accident coming from Los Alamos, where he worked, and my mother asked me if I wanted to come back and help him here at home. So I returned back to Embudo, and I just happened to remain here. I got married and raised my family here. I think the acequias are still basically the same way. One of the big differences is that now, as more and more newcomers are coming into the village, they don't understand the philosophy behind the acequias. So a lot of these people don't want for the workers of the acequias during the spring to go through their land, because they think that the acequias belong to them. And the acequias belong to the whole community. They don't belong to one person or two individuals or three. You know, they belong to the whole community, and nobody can block the easements. These acequias have easements that go way, way back. As I mentioned there in the book, the oldest citation I could find for easements date back to about 1256. And those are some of the changes that I've seen here in the community, you know, where people say, well, the acequia belongs to me and I don't want for anybody to go through my property.
Did they eventually adjust to the reality?
Well, they have to. Sometimes I think it becomes a little bit difficult. You know, I know that in, like, Taos, there have been some areas where they have had to call the state police to come in because the new property owners think that people are trespassing their property. So they have to become adjusted to the new reality of living in a community with acequias.
I would think that eventually they see the wisdom of it, no?
Well, some of them do, others don't, you know.
Yeah. Well, it's just about time to go, but I want to let people know that the book is called Enduring Acequias, Wisdom of the Land, Knowledge of the Water by Juan Esteban Arellano. And it's a lovely book with photographs in it of places and water and acequias and all kinds of places all over the world, actually, where you've traveled. You've traveled studying acequias.
Yes.
all over the world.
Well, not all over, but I've been a lot to Spain and Mexico more.
Well, I want to thank you so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Well, thank you.